Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Hannah Halperin, author of the debut novel, Something Wild. Hannah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Sure. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your debut novel, Something Wild, how would you describe the novel?
Sure. So Something Wild is the story of Nessa and Tanya Bloom, who are two adult sisters, and one weekend they go home to their childhood house in Arlington, Massachusetts, and they're helping their mother, Lorraine, clean out the house because she's going to move. And that weekend they find out that their mom is in an abusive marriage with their stepfather. And both sisters, who are pretty different women, have different reactions to finding out about this abuse, and they have very different relationships with their stepfather as well. And they're trying to get their mother to leave this marriage. And over the course of this weekend, and sort of witnessing the abuse that they do, it ends up stirring up for the sisters a traumatic thing, this event that happened in their early teenage years that they've never spoken about before.
And do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to write Something Wild?
Yeah, the novel really began as a short story that I wrote, I guess it was back in 2015. And the story was kind of about those early teenage years, and this very intense female friendship and this traumatic thing that happens to these two teenage girls, and the fallout between the two teenage girls following it. And, you know, in the story that I wrote, the two girls were friends and they kind of go their own separate ways because the thing that happens to them was really upsetting, and they both experience it very differently. And when I started turning, the story was really haunting me, and I wanted to make it bigger. And as I started turning it into a novel, in the story, the girls were friends, and I decided to make them sisters in the novel. And this, you know, it became much bigger to me. And as they became sisters, I started thinking a lot about their family and how they'd grown up, and, you know, who their parents were. And, you know, when you're sisters and you don't necessarily have that option to walk away from each other after something really awful happens, you know, how does their relationship evolve from there? And, you know, the story is, the novel is a lot about divorce, and after the girls' parents divorce, they each marry, they each remarry pretty quickly, and one of the daughters becomes quite close with the mother's new husband, and the other daughter becomes close with the father's new wife. And I started asking questions of sort of why does that happen, and sort of how does this family evolve over the years. And it kind of grew from there. I had all these sort of moving pieces with the novel, sort of how does the past play into the present? And it was kind of this messy process of figuring out how do these different parts of their lives all fit in together.
Sure. And what was it that made you decide that you wanted to turn this short story, this original short story, into a novel? Was it just the idea kept resonating and staying with you?
Yeah. The story was, it was such a weird story. It kind of came out of, it was one of those stories that sort of came to me in a flash, and it was probably the strangest story I'd ever written. And it was kind of a frightening, scary story. And it did this thing where it played with the past and present a lot. And I just could imagine it being bigger. It seemed like there was room for it to be bigger. And it, I just wanted to sort of see what happened if I tried to make it bigger. I wasn't bored with it yet. I wasn't done with it. I could imagine sort of staying in that weirdness for longer. And so I did. And it just grew.
Sure. Well, you said that this was different than other stories that you had written. Do you remember when you originally wrote the original short story? Did it start with just an idea? Did it start with just a single sentence? Do you remember that?
I remember it started with a voice, and it started with a voice, and then sort of as I was writing, I had this kind of strange idea for something that would happen in the past, and I didn't know if it would work. And it was one of those, say, you know, I was thinking a lot about sort of, you know, kind of the loneliness of those sort of early teenage years of being a girl, and kind of, you know, it's a very vivid time of life, and sort of the danger surrounding that particular time of life, and sort of in that story, sort of pushing it to an extreme. And I decided to sort of try it out in the story. I think short stories are a safe place to sort of try out extremes. And I did it. And it was, you know, it was during my MFA program. So I was sort of lucky enough to have readers and sort of get feedback. And it was an exciting story for me to write because it was more plot driven than perhaps some of my other stories.
Right. And I'm curious, what was your writing journey that led you to writing and getting your MFA and then writing in this debut novel? Had you always written?
Yeah, I've always written since, you know, I could. I remember in second grade having like a, you know, our first creative writing assignment and just being so excited by it, and then kind of writing sort of nonstop from there. So I've been writing sort of, you know, short stories or little novels, you know, for as long as I can remember. And that's, you know, and reading a ton. And then basically taking as many writing classes as I possibly could, because that was the thing I always just loved to do. And then, you know, throughout, you know, getting a job after college and taking some writing classes at the same, you know, at the same time. And that's kind of when I learned about MFAs and, you know, getting really fixated on wanting to go and do that and writing short stories while I was in Wisconsin. And it was kind of the summer after my MFA that I started turning one of these short stories into a novel. And then after I graduated, I moved to Martha's Vineyard for 2 years, and I was working as a domestic violence counselor. And that's when I wrote the first draft of this novel, pretty much during those 2 years.
And so what was your MFA experience like at the University of Wisconsin-Madison?
I loved it. It was so exciting to be able to just spend so much time. I wrote more there than I'd ever written before. And it was, you know, to me, the most exciting part was having this cohort of people who were so talented and reading their writing each week and feeling, you know, the just feeling excited to be around them and getting their feedback. And, you know, writing is such an insular thing. So having that community of readers and writers, it was the first time I kind of allowed myself to really take it seriously. And it was so much fun. I loved it.
And have you stayed in touch with your classmates?
Yeah. I mean, most of them were the first readers of Something Wild. And, you know, I'm in a writing group now, and one of the people in my cohort is in that writing group. And, you know, we stay in touch quite a bit. So it's just been nice because they're some of my most, really good friends, and then also just trusted readers.
That's great. So are you working on another novel now?
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I've been working on a second novel, and it's been really nice to have this other project that I've been sort of consumed by.
And so what was the path to publication like for you once you did finish your novel, Something Wild?
I ended up doing a lot of edits with my agent. She really helped me to kind of get the novel ready to send out. And then we sold it to Viking. It ended up being sort of a few months before the pandemic hit, and found an amazing home for it. I really love my editor, Allison Lorenzen at Viking, and then did a bunch more edits with her, and it was all sort of during the pandemic. And but it, it kind of went pretty smoothly, and then it came out at
That's
the end
great.
Of June. Yeah.
Well, what are some novels that you've read recently that you enjoyed?
I recently, I've been rereading a lot actually, but I recently reread The Altruist by Andrew Ridker, which I loved the first time and loved the second time too. It's about this Jewish family who are sort of reconvening in the Midwest where they grew up after a loss in the family, and they have a lot of issues, and it's the author goes into each of their points of view, and it's just, it's so funny. I don't often laugh out loud while I'm reading, but I do with this book, and it's very cringy humor. It's just so smart, and it's also an incredibly sad book, but it's kind of that mix of funny and sad that I'm always looking for, and it's really good. And I also am starting on Happy All the Time by Laurie Colwin, who's a writer that I really love. I've mostly read her short stories, but this is a novel, so I'm excited to be reading it.
That's great. Well, what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories and novels?
The thing that just came to mind is a piece of writing advice that one of my professors, Judy Mitchell, gave us at the beginning of our MFA. And it was, I think if you are, a writer embarking on writing, one of the things that you will inevitably just face, get a lot of is rejection. I've gotten way more rejection than I have acceptances. And, she sort of gave this advice of, I think some rejection is going to hurt more than others. To give yourself maybe a day and maybe even up to a few days, 2 or 3 days to feel sad and, however you deal with rejection, if you want to, cry in bed or whatever it is you do, like give yourself those days, but then you have to get up and keep writing. And because otherwise you'll just stop. The short story that I, eventually turned into a novel, like that story was rejected, a number of times. And some of them were very tough rejections for me. But I think ultimately, because it was rejected, I ended up sort of, it stayed in my consciousness, and I kept working on it and working on it. And ultimately, I'm happy that it was rejected. Because I ended up sort of turning it into something bigger, and it was ultimately published a few years later. But I think it's writing is one of those things that requires both a thin skin and a thick skin. I think a lot of writers, you kind of have to have that thin skin to absorb all what's going on around you. And, maybe this is a generalization, but, a lot of writers are pretty sensitive people. But you also have to have that thick skin, because you're going to be dealing with quite a bit of rejection, and you have to have some underlying faith that, to keep going despite
sure.
it.
Do you think that you would have written the novel if the short story had sold right away?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. I can't say.
Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your debut novel, Something Wild?
You can find me on Instagram, Hannah, Hannah.Halperin. And I also have a website, hannahhalperin.com.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Hannah Halperin, author of the debut novel, Something Wild. The novel is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Hannah, thanks for doing this interview.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff. This was great.
Now, stay tuned for a brief excerpt from the audiobook of Something Wild by Hannah Halperin, narrated by Rebecca Lohman. Available from Penguin Audio, wherever audiobooks are sold.
Frankly, Tanya Bloom doesn't have time to drive up to Massachusetts and clean out her childhood house. She has dozens of cases to work on, and though she'll bring her computer, the chance of getting anything done is slim. Moving her mother out of 12 Winter Street is a daunting job, and Nessa will be no help. Really, it would be easier to send her mother and her sister off into Boston for the day so Tanya could do it herself, go through the house with industrial-sized trash bags, throw the majority of everything away. Her mother has a hard time saying goodbye to almost anything. The move makes no sense. The so-called property in New Hampshire that her stepfather, Jesse, recently inherited is nothing more than a dusty patch of rubble. The house itself is so bleak and dated, Tanya could barely scroll through all 6 photos on her phone before calling her mother to talk her out of it. "Jesse's going to fix it up. We have big plans for it," Lorraine kept repeating in such a psychotically cheerful voice that Tanya realized Jesse must have been sitting right there beside her mother. The conversation hadn't lasted more than 3 minutes. Tanya is taking 2 personal days off from work to make the trip, Thursday and Friday, the first personal days she's taken since starting her job as ADA in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office 1 year ago. "What will you do without me this weekend?" Tanya asks Eitan, her husband, that morning. "You should take Will out," she says. "Help him meet somebody new." It's 6:30. The latest they've both stayed in bed together for a long time, months at least. On any other Thursday, Tanya would have already been coming home from the gym by this time, ready to jump in the shower and begin the mad dash of getting dressed in order to get to the 79th Street subway stop no later than 7:50 a.m. Eitan makes a face. "It's too soon," he says. "Besides, Will's too soft for New York women." "His ex was from New York." Tanya rolls over on her side and looks at Eitan. She likes him best this way, before he's showered or shaved or brushed his teeth, blurred around the edges with sleep. No one else in the world gets to see him like this. "Even so, he needs someone kind," Eitan says. "Maybe someone from the Midwest." "Do we know any kind people?" "Not really," Eitan says, smiling. He reaches for her hand. "Hey, what about your sister?" "I think she's seeing some deadbeat she met at work, and there's no way I'd let you set Will up with Nessa." "Why not?" "He's too nice for her. Or maybe she's too nice for him." Though nice isn't exactly the word Tanya's looking for. "What's wrong with that?" Eitan asks. 2 really nice people can't be together. They'd get bored. There'd be no tension." "So I take it I'm the nice one in our relationship?" "Of course you are. You're one big giant pushover." Tanya pats his stomach. Her phone vibrates on the nightstand, and Tanya leans over Eitan to check. It's a text message from Nessa. "Fuck, I think I have a UTI. An ellipsis appears, and several more texts follow in quick succession. "Is it normal to pee 7 times in 1 hour? My vagina feels like it's going to fall off." "Not normal," she texts back. "Do you want Eitan to write you an RX? "Yes, please," Nessa responds. "Okay," Tanya writes. "Hydrate."
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at HereYouAreAZ.com.